A frequent guest on Issues Etc., Aaron Wolf, died on Easter Sunday, April 21st, 2019. Learn how you can support Aaron's widow and his six children at issuesetc.org/AaronWolf. In his memory, we present this Issues Etc. encore. It took 20 years. 20 years is a long time, right? I don't know. It seems pretty fast to me. 1993, Hawaii started talking about same-sex marriage. By 2013, 20 years later, the Supreme Court is saying, in effect, although a lot of loose ends need to be worked out, in effect, yes, we are going to have same-sex marriage in the United States. Just bring us the right case to this court. And you will watch it happen within the next couple of years. Was it inevitable? Well, you know, Christians can never say that anything is absolutely inevitable. That would be to deny God's providence and his will over things. But in a cultural and political sense, what laid the foundation for a 20-year move from one state talking about same-sex marriage to all 50 states standing on the verge of having same-sex marriage? Culturally, how did that happen? Joining us to talk about, of all things, the moral argument for gay marriage that held sway with both the proponents and the opponents of same-sex marriage, Aaron Wolf. He's associate editor of Chronicles Magazine and author of an article in the latest Chronicles titled Hellbent, Why Gay Marriage Was Inevitable. Aaron, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back.
You say maybe a better question than asking why it happened is asking why it took so long to happen. Why?
Yeah, this is an interesting way to look at it, I think, because in a way, what we could say, what was it that stood in the way of gay marriage before this recent sort of deluge between our media and the Supreme Court rulings? And really, I think it boils down to this. If we set aside, obviously, the believing churches in the United States who oppose who are opposed this measure and are increasingly in the minority, as a culture at large, what stood in the way? And I think the answer to that is just feeling or sentiment, because really, what basis do we have as a people to deny anyone anything? I mean, what do we base as a consensus as to what it is that is our standard for right and wrong? Now, I mean, obviously, people appeal to things. They appeal to the law. They appeal to decisions that have been handed down in the past as sort of our common law tradition. But the reality is, and we know this if we pay attention to the way these rulings come about and the way that, you know, network television gets produced, et cetera, is that all of those things that we seem to appeal to as standards can be utterly ignored or redefined or made to read as if meaningless if it's something that we really want. I mean, this is the case with Roe versus Wade and finding all these penumbrae and the like in the Constitution that somehow the founding fathers had in mind guaranteeing abortion rights. You know, when we want something, when we feel like this makes sense as a people, this is generally where we go. So the only thing I think that was holding us back was a move of popular sentiment toward allowing so-called marriage equality. And of course, we can look at the culture and see how this just hit us, as I said, as a deluge. We had gay marriage all of a sudden all over the television, just ramped up. We had, you know, plot lines and whole television shows, movies, music, everything, talking as if this is just what is normal, marriage equality.
Now, you say, and this is something I have never heard anyone else say, and we have talked about same-sex marriage for the last 10 years, last almost 20 years now on issues, et cetera, at various levels of priority. But we've been talking about it for the better part of those two decades. I have yet to hear any person put it the way you did in Chronicles Magazine. You're saying essentially that the moral argument for same-sex marriage, and it was a distinctly moral argument made in favor of it, is something that appealed broadly because it appealed to everyone's desire to have their own pleasures affirmed, or at least tolerated. Explain that.
Yes. Well, let me give you this background first, because in a sense, you have to say this felt so sudden, even though it was sort of a legal process of 20 years. And one of the things I mentioned in the article is kind of background, is the idea that Americans tend to think that there are more homosexuals in our country than there actually are. And this is something I cited from an article, I think from The Atlantic, where, you know, someone went out and actually Gallup did this great survey, and they broke it down fairly well, that even with, you know, evangelical Christians or conservatives or self-professed liberals, etc., and the data was pretty similar, that Americans today think that somewhere between one-fifth and one-quarter of their fellow Americans are homosexuals. And when you combine that with sort of the media assault, then there was, I think, a general feeling, that this is something that we cannot stand in the way of these people and their equality. The reality is that it's somewhere around 2%, which is fairly stable among cultures in the West and for the last 200 years. So that's kind of a backgrounder. But why is it then that normal Americans who are what they would consider themselves to be heterosexual, why is it that they felt this great need? And the answer is not because they want to be gay married, which we know as Christians know is an impossibility anyway, but it's because there's kind of a deal that we make, I think, morally and mentally. That
about 30 seconds here before we break.
If you leave me alone, I will leave you alone. This is an argument that feminism has made. It's the reason why feminists in the past have argued that lesbianism is sort of the ultimate expression of feminism, not because lesbianism is something that all feminists want for themselves, but because it is symbolic of an utter denial of any natural order and natural rules. And so if I, as a so-called heterosexual, accept homosexuality and in a public forum, which is what gay marriage really is, then what I'm saying is, now you leave me alone.
Aaron Wolf is our guest. We're talking about the moral argument for gay marriage that was made and apparently after 20 years managed to prevail, at least culturally. On this Thursday afternoon, July the 25th, he's associate editor of Chronicles Magazine and author of the article in Chronicles titled Hellbent, Why Gay Marriage Was Inevitable. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number on this Thursday afternoon. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet @issuesetc. When we come back, do the most radical of homosexual activists really want gay marriage? Do they really want categories like homosexuality, heterosexuality, either? We'll be right back. Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org. Shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Thursday afternoon, July the 25th. We're talking about the moral argument for gay marriage. Aaron Wolf is our guest of Chronicles Magazine. Aaron, you say that we can watch kind of the wheels or the cogs of this moral argument. And again, we use the term moral here, not in the sense that it's objectively a moral argument, but it's essentially a moral argument based upon a different morality than Christians would accept. But
yes,
we can watch the cogs of this argument turn in the example of President Obama's, I think I'll use his term, his evolution on this issue. Walk us through that.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, clearly when he was running for office 2008, you know, he did, among other things, the sit down with Rick Warren and in front of a large stage out at Saddleback Community Church, and he was asked about this question of do you support gay marriage? This was an issue when he traveled around. He appeared on the stage of The View, and you know, all these folks asking him, you know, from the ultra left, why is it that you won't support this? And he knew then that the feeling, the sentiment of the country had not yet turned on this, and it would be political suicide if he were to say, you know what, I agree, we need marriage equality. So instead, he waited until the tide really had largely, I think, turned in his favor, if by ever so slight a majority. And so the way he described it, when he sort of came out of the closet in favor of same-sex marriage, was in terms of conversations that he and Michelle had with the two daughters, Sasha and Malia. And he says it wouldn't dawn on them that somehow their friends' parents would be treated differently. And so, again, it's framed purely in terms of sentiment and in terms of questions of equality. And so, really, I mean, when you have the kind of ethic or morality that we have, not in our, again, in our conservative churches that take Scripture seriously, but as a people, our bedrock or sort of consensus upon which we interact with one another and with the law is this sense of equality that is rooted in sentiment. And really what I'm driving at in this piece, I don't maybe spell it out as plainly as to use this word materialist, but really our consensus in this country is materialist. That is, we think that what's real and what matters is what you can see and taste and smell, and nothing outside of us, no invisible thing, such as either a natural law or something revealed by a God somewhere, let alone the triune one who lives and reigns, then that these other invisible avenues that aren't material can provide us with something that says stop, that says no, this is right and this is wrong. We reject that ultimately, and really, though we've coasted on fumes, I think, for over a century and a half, at least, because we still have the trappings, and our sentiment is still sort of conformed to what we grew up with, what is sort of passed down from previous generations as what feels right and wrong, and that those feelings had been shaped by something that wasn't materialist, that was, in fact, Christian, Judeo-Christian culture coming out of the Middle Ages. And so when we're left with only a materialist consensus, and so, you know, we Christians, we sort of interact with it, as coming from the outside and saying, well, these are our particular beliefs and they're formed in this way, then but everyone else in general starts with a foundation of sentiment, then really it's a perfect moral argument, again, from that materialist consensus that you know, it just feels wrong to deny someone something that everyone else gets to enjoy.
You used the term earlier, and it's the term of art that has come to, I think, the coup de grace in the whole debate came in the term marriage equality. Once that term was coined, it was over. It is the perfect term to achieve this end. But I'm wondering, you point out in the article that the kind of the thinkers in the homosexual avant-garde, while they may be interested in equality, marriage is not interesting to them at all, is it?
Exactly, because it the marriage part isn't interesting to more radical homosexualist thinkers, and neither is the category homosexual itself. And I want to come back to that, because this is an area where the church, I think, has utterly fallen down as well. But when it comes to gay marriage, yes, these radical activists and or the homosexual thinkers, and I've cited some of them in the article, but there certainly are many more, realize that the very idea of marriage is something that comes to them from the outside. It is, marriage is not, it's natural, but it does not derive from a materialist source, and I think there's a big difference there. And what happens then is that because the essence of homosexualist thought today is that there cannot be any restraint on anything that I seek as pleasure, then the whole idea of marriage itself is seen as a threat. And so, and you know, this sounds like ivory tower thinking from the outside, but no, this is very much what they write, and I cite some of those in the piece where they talk about how, look, you know, we had us a queer activist movement coming out of the late 60s and certainly the 70s and 80s where the idea was freedom, that is liberty and freedom from all sexual constraints, and what you want to impose upon us through gay marriage is actually something that comes out of a traditionalist mindset that has been for centuries governed by, you know, white heterosexual males. And so they don't, these activists don't want that. And this is one of the things I wonder aloud in the piece, is that if you have so few in the population who are actually homosexual, or claim to be homosexual, and that of that 2% number, there is not consensus that so-called marriage equality is what they even want, then why did this become so big of a deal? And again, that is where I go to my conclusion that it's a bigger deal for, not for homosexuals so-called, but for people in general who realize that at this very critical moment, this is some kind of constraint that we have no basis for opposing, and for imposing, and that if we do impose it, then that it has its implications not only on them but on me.
Talk about the rejection by the kind of the intelligentsia of the homosexual avant-garde, the rejection of any kind of gender categories, period.
Yes, this is interesting, because this fellow Jonathan Ned Katz, who is a self-proclaimed gay activist, wrote this book, 1990, called The Invention of Heterosexuality. And when I was looking at this, I found it was so interesting for this reason, that his timeline of what I would call the degeneration of our culture, he would call the evolution of our culture, but it matched up so nicely with my old mentor, Professor Dr. Harold O.J. Brown, and who's passed away now, but he wrote a book called The Sensate Culture. And his timeline in describing the way that we entered what he calls the late moribund phase of a sensate culture, which again is just a materialist culture where everything that matters is what we perceive with our senses and whatever feelings that emerge out of it. The timelines matched up, and so when you had at the turn in around 1900 of this great move from the country to the city, and more urbanites, and more of visible what we would call sexual immorality coming out at a time when liberal Christianity was on the rise, when there was a lack really of consensus already emerging as to what is the moral, what is the basis for our right and wrong. That it was at this time that people had this kind of sentiment that what those people engaged in what used to be called sodomitic acts, that's wrong. That just feels wrong. And so it was out of the medical community that this terminology of heterosexuality and homosexuality emerges. There's a German and there's European versions a few decades before, but it's around that time when it comes to the United States. And so why these terms? Because it was an attempt in this sort of materialistic way through science to explain these people. And of course, since the feeling overall at the time was that this is wrong, well, then it had to be described as deviant behavior. So what we considered status quo, we call heterosexuality. And then what these people who were engaged in something that made us feel squeamish, we called these people homosexuals. And then there was a quest, really, throughout the 20th century to try to come up with an explanation for them. It wasn't until 1974 that the psychiatric community was even willing, and there's a whole story there, really, that I can't get into. But
about 1 minute.
Fascinating about how the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of the psychiatric community, fought over whether to allow homosexuality to be called normal behavior. And so again, this happens over the course of the 20th century, where the medical community, because really they're the only ones left who can tell us something objective in a materialist culture. What is it that makes these people act this way? It was a quest to define the homosexual, and of course that quest still continues on in studies of genetics and epigenetics.
With only about 30 seconds before we let you go, Aaron, tell us a little bit about Chronicles Magazine. Only about 30 seconds.
Well, we are what some people refer to as the paleo conservatives. We are a vestige of the old right, and so what we try to do is apply conservative political thinking and a general consensus of conservative Christian thinking on matters of culture. And so in this case, what was very unique, I think, about our voice is we had the July issue in which my piece appears was on so-called same-sex marriage, that we were coming out and saying, look, these categories that even churches have accepted, the Catechism of the Catholic Church describes homosexuals. This terminology itself is a concession to the materialist culture, that homosexuals and heterosexuals simply don't exist. What we used to call deviant behavior is what Scripture teaches. And this is something that churches have to be held accountable for and begin to teach again according to Scripture.
Folks, you can find out more about Chronicles Magazine at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Aaron Wolf is Associate Editor of Chronicles Magazine, author of an article in the latest Chronicles titled Hellbent, Why Gay Marriage Was Inevitable. Aaron, thanks for being our guest.
It's great to be back.
When we come back, Pastor Ted Giese joins us. We'll do a movie review of the big horror movie for Midsummer, The Conjuring. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoda, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It's here, it's here, it's finally here. Lutheran Catechesis Catechist Edition, a comprehensive guide to catechesis for a Lutheran congregation, including expanded helps on the catechism, a section of catechesis on the table of duties, Christian vocation, and learn by heart schedules for the congregation at prayer. Order yours today from the Concordia Catechetical Academy at peacesussex.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.